Good morning. I'm glad to be with you. I'm thankful that you invited me to come. I've been shown a lot of kindness already. So far, it's been a good day. We've had beautiful weather. Yesterday, we had beautiful weather. Saw some storms that were majestic. But I want to ask you a question about the kind of day that you may have had before. Have you ever had a bad day? And I don't just mean, have you ever woken up and your hair was sticking up and just would not lay down like it should? I don't mean if you're like Calvin, he was telling me about this last night. Have you ever got a boo-boo on your foot? Calvin's telling me all about it. I don't mean just a bad day like that. I don't even necessarily mean a bad day at your work where things just weren't going right. Have you ever had a bad day that was truly dark, that was bleak, a day where you just didn't know if you could be any lower? Maybe a day where someone you cared deeply about, someone you trusted, betrayed you. Have you ever had a day where you lost a parent, a spouse, a child? If you haven't had one of those days yet, someday you will. Oftentimes, people write music or write songs about the kind of days they have. Throughout history, people write songs about their bad days. Even in American culture, we have just about a whole style of music called the blues about bad days. One of my favorites starts out, "I got a letter this morning, what you reckon it read, said, hurry, hurry, the girl you love is dead." That's where it starts out, and it just goes downhill from there. So we have popular music written like that, but even our songs, our hymns, there's hymns written about that. Especially back in the interwar period and around the Great Depression and stuff, you had a lot of songs that were expressing a bleakness. Songs and hymns that were expressing a despair. There was one written in about 1940. It says, "Living below in this old sinful world, hardly comfort can afford." Maybe the part about hardly comfort can afford, we may or may not can sing that honestly. I think most of us can't. We have air conditioning. That's a pretty good comfort, I would say. But many of our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world, in Africa, Central and South America, I think they could honestly seem hardly comfort can afford. But listen to the next line in that song. "Where could I go but to the Lord? Where could I go but to the Lord?" This song reflects a desperation, maybe nearly hopelessness. But look how it ends up. "Where can I go but to the Lord?" And like I said, once you do have a terrible day, a dark day, you can maybe start to relate a little bit better to hymns like this. Once we have some perspective, we see that maybe not only are some of these songs, are they scriptural, but they're more relatable than we might have thought at one time in our life. Think about David. What he wrote in the Psalms, meaning the Psalms, express the same idea. In fact, the song, portions of the Psalms, along with Ecclesiastes, Job, those are some of the darkest, most desperate words ever put to paper. It's expressing a bleakness, a darkness, a desperation. Look at Psalm 113. or rather Psalm 13. Let's just read through that very quickly. How long, O Lord, wilt thou forget me forever? How long wilt thou hide thy face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart all the day? How long will my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Enlighten my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Lest my enemy say, I have overcome him. Lest my adversaries rejoice when I am shaken. But I have trusted in thy loving kindness. My heart shall rejoice in thy salvation. I will sing to the Lord, because he has dealt bountifully with me. He starts out, he calls on the Lord. And there are these expressions of this feeling of hopelessness, of powerlessness, extreme difficulty, distress. And here David feels like, maybe the Lord has forgotten me. Maybe he's even hiding himself. But then it ends up talking about how he's going to trust in the Lord. Or consider Psalm 61. Look at the beginning of Psalm 61. Hear my cry, O God. Give heed to my prayer. From the end of the earth I call to you when my heart is faint. Or Psalm 77. A few of those early verses. Psalm 77. In the night my hand was stretched out without weariness. My soul refused to be comforted. Going on, you have held my eyelids open. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. And then verse 7. Will the Lord reject forever? And will he never be favorable again? And finally, maybe the most familiar of these ideas. Look at the beginning of Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? Far from my deliverance are the words of my groaning. These Psalms of David, they were putting his struggles into words, and they help us to put our struggles into words. But the most important part is after all these expressions of trouble, of trial, of pain, they end on notes of confidence. They end on notes of confidence. Just like the hymn we talked about earlier, those hymns, living alone in this old sinful world, hardly a comfort can afford. They end on confidence. They might begin with a bleak picture, but if there's one thing that I want you to remember from this morning, it's that these Psalms, they're not just mere cries for help, but they're statements of confidence that those cries of help will be answered. So this morning, I want us just to spend just a little bit of time in the Psalms, looking at a few, looking at how our relationship with God should be, what it should look like if we want to take advantage of God and His help in our times of trouble. Go ahead and turn over to Psalm 54. Psalm 54. And sort of the background of this particular psalm, isn't that period when David is being pursued by Saul, when Saul is going after him, trying to kill him? If you looked over in 1 Samuel chapter 26, the Ziphites, they're loyal to Saul. They seek out him at Gibeah to let him know that David is hiding in the wilderness with those 3,000 men. So this is the second occasion where Saul has his life spared by David. David had plenty of opportunity to take Saul's life. And then 1 Samuel 24 through 26, there's all this activity going in. In chapter 24, David's ambushed by Saul. He spares his life. Chapter 25, he's insulted. He's mistreated by Nabal. And then chapter 26, Saul, who's hoping that Saul would have given up the chase by now, surely this man is not going to keep on trying to kill me. But Saul's coming after him again. And this is, keep in mind, this is right after Samuel died. this man that David trusted in, this, I think he was a mentor to David. He's died. He's, in a lot of ways, he may feel like he's alone. Saul's coming after him another time, trying to kill him another time on the chase. David might feel like, I can't even get a moment's rest. I can't just get a second when someone's not trying to kill me. When will this end? There's nobody on my side even. When am I just going to have a little bit of peace? But let's read Psalm 54. Save me, O God, by thy name, and vindicate me by thy power. Hear my prayer, O God, give ear to the words of my mouth. For strangers have risen against me. The violent men have sought my life. They have not set God before them. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is the sustainer of my soul. He will recompense the evil to my foes, destroy them in thy faithfulness. Willingly will I sacrifice to thee. I will give thanks to thy name, O Lord, for it is good. For he has delivered me from all trouble, and my eye has looked with satisfaction upon my enemies. While we might see others giving up hope, letting doubt take over, David finds the hope in this situation. Then in verse 4, he says that God is his helper, that God is the sustainer of his soul. And the idea of that word there is to prop something up, or to lean upon something, or to take hold of something, or to establish, to rest, to stand fast. Back when I lived in Auburn, there was a family that was, to say that they were not well off, would be putting it mildly. And several of the other members there, they saved up the money, got together, and built them, or rather bought them, a little house, a very small house. It needed a lot of remodeling. So every Saturday, a number of us would go over there and work on remodeling this house. And it was in very bad shape. And so one Saturday, my job was to fix the kitchen floor, because where the refrigerator was sitting, it leaked some water and stuff, and the floor was, it looked a little bit rotted. And so I get out a saw, and I cut up the flooring. So I look, and the subflooring's rotted. So I saw out again, and it turns out there's another layer of subflooring. And that's rotted. So I say, okay, I take out my saw, and I saw that subflooring up, and you can just see down to the ground, and it turns out that beam that runs under the floor, that holds the whole thing up, that whole beam was rotted. It was just like rotted in half. I don't know how someone hadn't fallen through the floor yet. But the idea here is that beam was the support. That beam was what held that up. Just like David's saying here, the reason that he can stand up to this tribulation, this trial, this pressure, is that God was the one providing him strength. Think about in the New Testament where Christ tells his disciples to build on a firm foundation. And all the little kids here know the song, the wise man built his house upon the rock. That's the idea. That rock, it supports, it holds up, it gives strength to the building. The foolish man, he built his house on the sand, and it might stand up for a little bit, but when those storms come, when the winds come, beat against it, that sand gives up because its support is not strong. Just like that beam under that kitchen, it was not strong. But our problem is what we so often find ourselves doing is that God wants to serve that purpose for us. He wants to be our strength. He wants to be our support, our beam, our rock. But as people, what we do so often is we try to find other sources of strength, and we try to find other sources of support rather than our reward. Sometimes it just takes the form of thinking that I can handle this by myself. And it's not something that we may consciously do and say, you know what, I don't need God for this, I can do this myself. But in the way we think, maybe the language we use, it kind of betrays this. We might say, I'm going to do this on my own. I can do this by my strength. If I can just be a little stronger, I can do this. But the problem with that is, if we don't have God for our strength, we will never succeed. If we don't have God for our strength, eventually we're going to fail. Just like that beam I was talking about under that kitchen. It held that floor up for a little bit. But eventually, that was going to fall. There wasn't a maybe or a might about it. It was eventually going to give way. God is our strength. We will always succeed. There's no question of God ever failing. There's no question that God will ever, that the support of God will ever fail or buckle. When we need strength to make it through this life, the troubles, the trials, the hardships of this world, we have to look to God for our strength. Whether it's temptations, whether it's physical trials, we in ourselves, as people, as men and women, we don't have the strength to do it on our own. But when we look to God, when we look to God to sustain us, to be our sustainer, just like David looked to God to be his sustainer, then we have the strength that we need. Think about what David wrote over in Psalm 56. I appreciate the reading this morning. Psalm 56. And the background for this is even a little bit further back in David's past, a little bit earlier. It's right when he's starting to run from Saul. If you look at 1 Samuel 21, David fled from Saul as Jonathan lets him know that, yeah, my dad's definitely trying to kill you. He hadn't had really time to prepare, to get his supplies, to do anything that he needed to do. Had no weapons. So he goes to the priest, and the priest gives him some bread, helps him out a little bit. And then he goes to where he thinks that Saul can't get me here. Saul will be too afraid to follow. He goes to the city of Gath in Philistia. In the land of the Philistines, he's looking to seek refuge with Achish the king. And so the problem here is that they let him into the city, but it's not too long till they think, maybe this was a bad idea. Letting the guy that is famous for killing a giant Philistine warrior into our city, maybe that wasn't the best idea we've ever had. They start to question their judgment in that. In 1 Samuel 21, verse 11, we see the servants of Achish telling him, "Is this not David the king of the land? Did they not sing of this one as they danced, saying, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s? David took these words to heart and greatly feared Achish, the king of Gath. So David was in a little bit of a tight situation. He was running from Saul, this guy who was just losing his mind, trying to kill him. And so he had gone to a place where he thought he might be safe, and it turns out these guys want to kill him too. But David, he gets out of that situation, but what was running through his mind then? What was he thinking then? Let's read Psalm 56 again and see. "Be gracious to me, O God, for man has trampled upon me. Fighting all day long, he oppresses me. My foes have trampled upon me all day long, for they are many who fight proudly against me. When I am afraid, I will put my trust in thee. In God, whose word I praise, in God I have put my trust. I shall not be afraid. What can mere man do to me? All day long they distort my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They attack, they lurk, they watch my steps. As they have waited to take my life, because of wickedness, cast them forth. In anger put down the peoples, O God. Thou hast taken account of my wanderings. Put my tears in thy bottle. Are they not in thy book? Then my enemies will turn back in the day when I call. This I know, that God is for me. In God whose word I praise, in the Lord whose word I praise, in God I have put my trust. I shall not be afraid." What can man do to me? Thy vows are binding upon me, O God. I will render thank offerings to thee. For thou hast delivered my soul from death, indeed my feet from stumbling, so that I may walk before God in the light of the living. There's a lot of applicable material here, a lot of things I would love for us to look at if we had the time. But what I want us to particularly focus on is there in verse 4, the end of that. I shall not be afraid. What can mere man do to me? We know that God will protect his people, and that sometimes God physically protects and delivers his people. We see that all throughout the scripture. And David has the confidence in the Lord that he would protect him, the one that he had anointed to be king. And if God was going to protect him and save him, then there was no man that would stand a chance against the Lord. No man that would stand a chance against Jehovah. But there's maybe even a little bit more of a greater fulfillment. Maybe more to the idea than just that there's not a person that can come up against God. The Hebrew writer in chapter 13 quotes that, "What can mere man do to me?" And even there, when he quotes it, there's an idea of a physical aspect to it. In verse 5 of chapter 13 of Hebrews, it speaks of keeping free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, "I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you." And the Hebrew writer is saying these things to assure people that God will provide for them. But it's written to people who are being persecuted, people whose things are being taken away, people who are losing their possessions, people who are suffering for the Lord. And maybe the fullest application of this idea from both the Psalms and Hebrews there is that our ultimate fate is in the hands of God. The idea that if we suffer at the hands of men, there's only so much they can do. They can take our stuff. They can mock us. They can persecute us. They can throw us in jail. But there's only so much power they have. They don't have the power to take away the true things that God has promised us. They don't have the power to take away the rest that God has promised us. These men, they may think they have power, but they don't have true power. These men, take for instance Roman emperors. We might know some of their names, but they've been dead for a long time. Their empire fell a long time ago. They were just blips on the face of the earth. Just a little breath, their life. As Brother Paul Earnhardt likes to say, the universe is just a peanut in God's pocket. If we suffer at the hands of men, whether it's being beaten, stoned like Paul was, or whether it's just at our school, at our work, if it's just someone treating us weird, making fun of us, mocking us because, you know, we're not going to tell a lie, or we're not going to dress in some way that we shouldn't. People don't have any real power. God is the one with the true power to protect us, to save us. And as Christians, our faith is in the hands of God. There's no man that can come and take our salvation away from us. Think about what Jesus tells his disciples in Matthew 10. Matthew 10, verse 28. Do not fear those who kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. I'm sure David was terrified of what he thought might happen to him at the hands of the Philistines or at the hands of Saul. But he makes it through these trials because he knows that his enemy is just a mere man. There's only so much they can do. They only have just a little bit of power. Compared to God, these men, these kings, they're just pipsqueaks. God is the one in control. Think to Daniel. The men that were against him were some of the most powerful men in the world. Think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The man that was against them was arguably the most powerful man in the entire world. And they said, you know what? If you're going to try, if you can do what you want, but what you're going to try to do, that's nothing compared to what our God has the power to do. I shall not be afraid. What can mere man do to me? We as Christians can take courage. We can take heart. We can be bold. Because we know that God is on our side. If we're out in the world, at school, at work, we can be unafraid. We can be bold to tell people about the gospel, to live our lives in a godly way, to not be ashamed, because we know who is on our side. I want you to look at one more psalm, just one verse. Psalm 16, verse 2. Here David says, I said to the Lord, you are my Lord. I have no good besides you. In these times of trouble, David has the same thought that the hymnist we were talking about had thousands of years later. Where could I go but to the Lord? I encourage you to spend time reading through the Psalms, reading through Ecclesiastes, reading through Job. Job can sometimes, for some people, be hard to get through. But it's so helpful, it's so powerful when you see the kind of darkness, the kind of bleakness, the desperation, the hopelessness that these people felt. But then in the end, they could see that God was for them, that God had the power, that God was the one ultimately in control. I want to leave you with one more passage. John 6. He and John 6, this is Christ is saying a lot of hard things to his disciples. Difficult statements, and a lot of them, they aren't following him anymore. They say, this is hard. Who can hear it? They don't follow him any longer. John 6, beginning in verse 66. Look what Christ asks the apostles. As a result of this, those hard sayings, many of his disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore. Jesus said, therefore, to the 12, you do not want to go away also, do you? Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. That's what we can say to ourselves. When we are in difficult times, say, where can we go? And ultimately, the only answer we can give is that answer that Peter gave. Where else can we go? You're the only place that we can go. Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. You're the one who sustains us. You're the one who gives us true life. As Christians, we can have that confidence. We can have that joy, that peace, that strength. That's something to be so grateful for. But there are those who aren't Christians, those who haven't followed Christ, those who haven't gone to the Lord. And sadly, they can't have that same confidence. They can't have that same peace. There might be someone here this morning who's not a Christian. They might need to go to the Lord. They might need to follow Christ, to obey the gospel of Jesus. Because without Jesus, you can't have that confidence. You can't have that firm foundation under you. There might be those who are Christians who need prayers for strength. There may be those who are having dark days, hard times. They need prayers for strength, that they trust in the Lord, that they look to the Lord as their strength and not to themselves. But if there's anything that we can do for anyone, whether it's prayers for someone or whether it's helping you follow Jesus, helping you go to the Lord, if there's anything that we can do for anyone to help you, can you please let us know while we stand and while we sing?